members of the media, officials of parliament, you're all welcome. I guess we have only one important item, and that is a presentation by Secretary General Mme Joshua. I got it right this time. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services. With your permission, Chair, may I introduce the team first before I proceed? I'll start with myself. I'm Mrs. Joshua, Secretary General Office of the Chief Justice, and I'll go on my list.
Nathan Nove, Court Administration Chief Director.
Kasi Kutsur, CFO.
Kumuyo Mishweru, Sajay, CEO.
Zonye Vile Baloyi, Chief Director, Corporate Services.
Selo Chilwane, Acting Head, Judicial Policy at JSC.
Itumele Malau, Director of Strategic Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation.
The CFO of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I'm just here for support.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'm here with the team to present and do a briefing on the Office of the Chief Justice, Budget Strategic Plan, as well as the ACT. And firstly, may I convey my appreciation to the committee and our members for inviting us. Just as opening remarks, this is our first year as a fully fledged department. We are today 21 days as a fully department with its budget vote. So we will really appreciate the guidance of the honorable members on our journey moving forward. And we thank you for also the previous times that we appeared before this committee and the guidance that we have received. It has come very, very useful in charting our organization to be where it is today. And thank you very much. Chair and members, the presentation is outlined. The presentation outlines, we will deal with the introduction, the mandate, which captures the vision, the mission and the values, the organogram, compliance aspect, the OCJ strategy plan 2015 to 2020, as well as the first year ACP 15-16, which will cover the strategic goals, the budget overview, the objectives, indicators and targets, and which covers the three programs which constitute the department, which is program one, administration, two, judicial support and core administration, three, legal education and research. It will also cover the key strategic risks which are associated with the strategic plan and the conclusion. As an introduction, honorable members, the Office of the Chief Justice did made its own preparations towards the achievement of delivering the strategic plan and the APP in 2014 May. And during that planning session, the compliance with the requirements by the National Treasury and relevant institutions with regard to planning were achieved. The first draft of the strategic plan were developed in line with the Treasury framework, strategic framework, as well as submission to the National Treasury, the Auditor General, and the Department of Performance Monitoring Evaluation in August 2014. The second draft was also submitted to the same organization for approval. It at the end of 2014, November 2014, sorry. And maybe as a highlight, and my team will kill me if I don't mention this, because she did not do any of our work, but it was just on the strategic plan, as well as the APP, without any assistance from consultants, which was an in-house work. The mandate, the vision of the organization is a civil, transformed and independent judicial system that guarantees access to justice for all. And the mission provides support to the judicial system to ensure effective and effective court administration services with the values for respect and protection of the Constitution, honesty and integrity, openness, transparency and professionalism and excellence. The mandate of the National Department Office of the Chief Justice, I'll deal with those in terms of two perspectives. The first was when the department was established or proclaimed in 2010 by the presidential proclamation, and the functions were indicators, and the mandate of the office is of the department is to support the Chief Justice in executing executive and administrative judicial powers and duties as the head of the judiciary, as well as the head of the constitutional court. Those functions that were established at the beginning of the department outlined coordinating legal and administrative support, as well as providing communication and relationship management services, which include intergovernmental international coordination, develop court administration policy norms and standards, support judicial function of the superior court, support the JSC in executing its mandate, support to the South African Judicial Education Institute, also to execute its mandate, and in addition, which comes as part of the transfer of the superior court administrative functions, which effects from the 1st of October 2014, which is the second perspective to the mandate that was given to the department. That includes the, as I've already alluded to, supporting judicial functions of superior courts, establish and administer the judges' remuneration and conditions of employment act, establish and maintain the register of judges' registrable interests, and as an emphasis the committee and honorable members, the Minister of Public Service and Administration has made the determination of the functions to be transferred in an exercise on the 30th of March 2014. The OCL administrative structure we have presented it in the last appearances, it has not changed. With the Secretary General under that at the DG level, the COO which is still vacant, and the CEO who is the administrative support head for the FAJ Institute. And we have five chief directories, one for court administration, judicial policy and GSC secretariat, including research, and the CFO, corporate services and communication. Our staff complement is as follows. At SNF level, we are 28 with 10 vacant and funded positions, and we are 38 with 28 filled and 10 unfunded and still vacant. At equity level, SNF level, we are 14 white male, African male, two colors, no Indian and white males. Females, we are 7 Africans, one colored, one Indian, and one white woman. We have improved our equity as indicated last year. The picture was not as it is now. We'll share that if the members want to take questions on those. At level 1 to 12, the number has increased to note members because of the transfer of the High Court administration. At 1 to 12 level, we are 1,756, 324 which is unfunded and vacant, and 1,432 is filled. In terms of compliance, the OCJ has done its compliance requirements and obligations. The Treasury just as background, Treasury approved the budget for infrastructure in April 2014, which at that time already included the superior court, J and judges' salaries as direct charge from the national revenue. The requirements with National Treasury were complied with. The budget vote has been granted, it's vote 22. The FG is now the accounting officer for OCJ and therefore kicks in to place the Section 54 of the Security Accords Act. We also have in place Audit and Risk Committee appointed 15 May 2014. Now moving to the strategic plan and the APP. Over the MTFF period, the MCJ will ensure incremental implementation of the Security Accords Act and the 17th Constitution Amendment Act and align its plan towards the realization of the objectives of the APP, of the NDP, sorry, the National Development Plan. The strategic plan of the Office of the Chief Justice is anchored on three strategic goals. One on capacitation, to ensure that we create capacity and capacity for the organization to function. This will do by recruiting and attracting the competent personnel to the department. The second anchor is the support to the Chief Justice in fulfilling his functions as the head of the Judicial Branch of State. And the third objective is relating to rendering the effective and efficient administration and technical support to superior costs, which entails the support to this cost in the provision of services to improve case finalization, reduction of case backlog, and continuous administrative and technical support. The strategic plan and the APP is anchored also on Chapter 14 of the NDP, and four main areas that anchor the OCJ on the NDP relates to judicial selection and appointment, ethics, leadership and management of the judiciary and administration of courts, training of judicial officers, access to justice for speedier resolution of cases, as well as the acceleration of reforms to implement a judicially-led independent court administration. This has effect from the Chapter 14 of the NDP. The budget overview of the OCJ, the NTF budget allocations, is already announced by the Minister of Finance in February, 5.2 billion, round figure. The approved budget, 2014-15, which is what comes from what used to be allocated to the administration of the superior costs, 1.4 billion. The 2015-16 budget for the CA is 1.6 billion, which is a 13% increase from the last year, 14-15. For the 16-17 financial year, which is next year, will grow to 1.7, which is 7%, and the next year by 5%, which is 1.8 billion for the outer year. The budget overview, I will pause here, check the with your permissions, but if you're free to take over, I can brush to, I'm in your hands. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Che. The budget overview, I'm going to concentrate on the current financial year, 2015-16. In terms of our breakdown of the programs, Program 1 is administration. There is an allocation of 69.4 million, and that represents 9.3% of the overall budget. Then the core function in Program 2, your judicial support and court administration, receives a budget of 640 million, which represents 86.3% allocated to the core function. Then Program 3, which deals with our judicial education and our research unit, receives 32.6 million, which is an allocation of 4.4%. Now, the budget for the judges' remuneration and benefits amounts to 873 million of the 1.6 billion. Just maybe for the members' sake, that is a direct charge against the revenue fund, so that is not actually a budget that forms part of our day-to-day operations in the OCJ. If you then deduct the amount for the judges' remuneration, the OCJ as a department then has a budget of 742 million operational budget. And the percentages that I've quoted earlier reflects against the 742 million of the operational budget. Maybe just for interest sake, of the 742 million allocated to the OCJ, 405 million is for salaries of officials at head office level as well as provincial and court level. That represents 54.6% of the OCJ operational budget. then your goods and services budget is 267.6 million, representing 36.05% of the total budget. That is actually the portion that is where you can then manage and reprioritize funds if there are new issues that you need to reprioritize. Then the rest of the budget transfers and subsidies is 55 million, of which about 40 million goes to the judges' remuneration portion, and then payment for capital assets is 13.8 million. That is the breakdown of the 742 million of the operational budget. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
The next slide deals with the unfunded mandate, sorry, unfunded budget, because the mandate was never, we were never given any funds with regard to that mandate, especially the capacitation of the administration component of the OCG National Office. We had always members operated on a deficit with the OCG, as you know, there were never baselines with regards to funding the OCG as its inception. However, through cooperation and cooperation with the Department of Justice, we have, unfortunately, we have been in very good relations with justice, and because they were also not funded for that, because that was a new mandate to create a new department. So they gave us, out of the 50.3 million shortfall, they gave us the 8.5 million already. We are now sitting at 6.8, which is a reduction from 15.3 for personnel. Funds with regards to that at the OCG level, head office. And then the other level of unfunded mandate relates to capacitating officers of the Justice Judges President. 10.9 million or 11 million from OCG. Also on compensation of employees. These are funds that we need to support the Judges President to execute their functions in relation to implementing the Superior Court Act. As you would know, the Superior Court Act comes with additional functions to the head of court to manage the judicial functions. Then the next tranche of the unfunded mandates, 20 million for OCG provincial capacity. Here, the 20 million relates to the fact that the OCG post the 1st of October 2014 does not necessarily have a footprint in the regions. So we have inherited functions as well as some capacity and capacity from the regional offices and justice, but we do not have the funds or the capacity to be able to create a proper OCG center in each region. So this is the funds that are required to fill critical vacancies at the various level of the OCG for administering the Superior Court, as some said. The OCG, as we said, has no footprints, need to make sure that we support the Superior Court. The current transfer of personnel at regional level is only up to the ALD level, so we are still short of the lower capacity to do the administration. Within services level, 15 million, the transfer of functions will require additional operating funds, which will cater for internal audit costs, telecommunication costs, litigation, as well as other AG account funds that we need. The other level of unfunded mandate is called performance monitoring system. Here we need to create and capacity for us to be able to analyze the court statistics in support of the implementation of the norms and standards already established and implemented, which will enhance the court performance monitoring by the head of court or the judges president in each division. This will also include a monitoring system. Judicial education, 18 million, which is part of program 3. In order to expand the training programs for newly appointed magistrates, as you know, honorable members, that when magistrates are appointed, the first requirement is that they must undergo training before they sit and hear any case, and also conduct guided training for judges in order to improve capacity. That is 18 million. We have been given 10 million by the Department of Justice, which as I've already indicated through our cooperation, to augment the shortfall that we have here for which we are grateful for. Office accommodation under Program 1, this amount we request for additional funding in order for us to secure head office for the judiciary. Already, as members information, the Department of Public Works is already dealing with the process granted if it's required, and 6.5 million justice has already given us that to augment our shortfall, which is just under a million. Office furniture, which is problem one, I wouldn't go into detail with that. That goes together with the expansion and making sure that we create the environment for proper functioning by the officials, which is 2 million. The total is 78.7 million shortfall. If we minus the rest of the other additional funds that we've been assisted by justice, it's about 25 million. Program 1, administration. The purpose is to provide strategic leadership management support to each department. The description consists of the following sub-programs. Management, which looks at the generic management, support, planning, monitoring, M&E, reporting functions for the effective function of the department, corporate services, which is generic, and all departments, your HR, information technology, security, communication, and support services to the judiciary and the department, finance, administration, generic for financial assets, supply chain services to the department and judiciary, internal audit and risk management, also compliance issue in terms of audit and risk management services for the department and the superior cost, and office accommodation for acquisition of the new department so that we can set up properly. Then we deal now with the sub-program 1 on management. We have the strategic objective to ensure effective and effective management of the overall administration of the department. We will provide strategic leadership to the department to optimally operate, as well as ensuring that we convene in terms of the sub-program. We have two targets. I will not read each line, chapters and members, because I think some of it is already read. If I jump some of the issues, you can indicate. This sub-program is linked to outcome 12, efficient, effective department, and social development-oriented public service. And we have here two indicators, executive management, meeting convened, as well as compliance with the strategic planning, as well as annual planning for the department, and compliance with the requirements from other departments, as well as DME. Baseline 14-15, in terms of governance, executive management meetings will hold 10 per annum, and consistently keep it at that level until the outer year. And the second indicator, the draft annual performance plan 15-16, which is already done, as we presented it today. And in the next years, we will ensure that we comply as we have done in this financial year. We'll make sure that we do our consultations and submissions and approval for the Treasury, DME, and the Director General. Sub-program 2, corporate services. The objective here is to render effective corporate services to the judiciary and the department, and we will provide human capital management by filling 90% of identified critical and funded posts, training of officials, skills development, and improve ICT support services by implementing ICT master skills plan and implement health communication activities in line with our communication strategy. And the link to this priority school outcome 12, and here we have the indicator number 1, the number of officials trained in line with the skills development, skills plan. And the baseline for 14-15 was 20, we will increase it to 150 in the year 15-16 and escalate in the years 250 and 340. The second indicator provides a solid percentage of identified critical funded posts filled. In the last year, we filled 80% thereof. We are going to increase it by 10% to 90% in this financial year. And we'll consistently give in that at 90%, purely because we have no guarantee that we will have sufficient funds to fill all the posts. That is why we identify that there's only critical and funded posts. The third indicator, ICT master systems plan, developed and implemented. In the last year, we've already started with the drafting process. In the this financial year, the ICT must appear and shall be developed and completed, and then we will start implementation from 2015 going forward. The third indicator, number of communication activities implemented in line with the communication strategy. The baseline was 8 goal last year. We will increase that to 12 and will maintain that over the next financial year. Oh, I think I skipped the employee wellness programs conducted. Sorry, we conducted two in the last financial year, and we intend to increase that to 4. And if need be, we might have to include also these adjacent wellness programs, but we will keep them following. Finance administration sub program, rendering financial supply chain assets management services to the judiciary department. We'll ensure 100% compliance with the PFMA and other systems related thereto, and by providing 12 financial performance reports and processing 100% of invoices received within 30 days, and increase asset verification from 95 to 100% over the strategic plan period. The indicators that we have here, the link is the PFMA, which is straightforward. The performance indicators is the financial report that must be complied, that is in compliance, which is 12 per annum over the year. The percentage of receipt in workers paid within 30 days, we will increase that and make sure that we are compliant from 2015-16, which is 100% because that is a prescribed requirement. Percentage of assets verified will increase it to 100%. As we have to deal with that with the assets in the course. Internal audit and risk management, which is good governance and administration of the department, strategic objective, the link PFMA, the indicator, the number of internal audit reviews conducted will increase that from 6 to 10 in this financial year and maintain it, because we are not sure whether we will have more capacity, so we intend to maintain it at 8. If we could increase it, that would be well and good. The number of risk assessments conducted, 4, which is 1 per quarter, over a strategic 10 period. The percentage of reported fraud cases which are investigated within 60 days, we will maintain 100% compliance. Then sub-program 5, sub-program 5, office accommodation. Ensure sound acquisition of office accommodation for the department. This objective will also enable the department to discharge administrative functions effectively, and we will do so in through the Department of Public Works procurement process, because that's already alluded to, and this answers to outcome 12. The baseline is temporary office accommodation that we are sitting currently in, and we hope that by the end of this financial year we shall be completed with the acquisition. Program 2, judicial support and court administration. The purpose is to provide the judicial support and administrative services to the superior court, which includes the secretariat and administrative support to the JSC. And the description, the program consists of 3 sub-programs, one related to the administration of superior court, the other to JSC support, as well as the constitutional court adjudication of constitutional matters and other matters of general importance. On the JSC relates to support to ensure that the JSC performs its constitutional mandate, and the administration of courts relates to overall monitoring of performance of the courts and enhancing the judicial-stakeholder relations. In continuation, the Supreme Court of Appeal, also part of Program 2, will be supported to ensure that the appeals are dealt with, high courts and specialized courts to adjudicate and provide resolution of cases, in high courts, criminal and civil, in specialized land claims, competition appeal, as well as electoral and labor cases. Administration of superior courts for Program 1. The objective is to ensure effective and efficient administration of these courts. just as an explanation of the objective, is that we would like to ensure administration of superior facilities by coordinating 18 judicial meetings per annum. These are the forums on stakeholder forums that we need to just three superior cost performance reports, as well and three superior cost performance monitoring reports in 2015-16, five per annum from 2015-17 to 2019-20, as well as produce three monitoring reports on judicial norms and standards in 2015-16 and five per annum from 2017 to 2019-20 financial year. The link, this objective is linked to chapter 15 of the NPP on vision 2030 and strengthening insistence on judicial governance and the rule of law. We have under this sub-program three indicators. The first is the number of judicial meetings that will be coordinated, which is 18 all in all throughout the years. The second indicator talks to number of superior cost performance reports produced. We will produce in the financial year going forward this year three and increase five out to the strategic plan years, the fifth one per quarter, the fifth being the annual report. The third indicator, monitoring of reports, monitor reports on judicial norms and standards produced. We come from one in 14-15, in 15-16 we produce three, and in the next year we will be five, the same principle applies, one per quarter, and the last in the annual report. The next indicator talks to the percentage of administration superior costs. The third indicator talks to the default judgment granted by the registrar to the court, the second to the provisions finalized by the registrar, and the last being the customer service improvement plan, which are the three indicators under the administration. We did not have any difference on this from the Department of Justice, but in 2016 we set 55% target for the registrar's default judgment, which will increase by 5% over the years. The technicians, we have determined the target of 52%, which will increase by 2% going forward in the 5 years of the plan. With the customer service improvement plan, we intend to develop this in the financial year, which will start with the assessment test to see what is on the ground in the course. And in the financial year that we are in, we'll develop a pilot in the course. And in the next year, we will do a survey in all the course. And then in the next 2018, the plan will be implemented. So that develops will be implemented. My apologies. Program 2 Judicial Service Commission, the objective being to render secretariat and administrative support service to the Judicial Service Commission, linking to Chapter 14 of the NPP, strengthening judicial governance and the rule of law. We have two indicators, one, the number of judicial service teams that we are supporting and coordinating, and secondly, the report produced from the GSC, which is to issue, which happens in April and October every year. The Constitutional Court, a program 3, enhancing efficiency and term of legal judgment at the Crown Court. The link to the objective is chapter 15 also. This objective ensures that the Crown Court pursue its constitutional mandate to deliver judgment related to a constitutional matter and matters before it. And the indicator that we have there is the percentage of cases analyzed. 14-15, the baseline growth is 50%, from 15-16 to move to 80, and throughout the financial years. A program for Supreme Court of Appeal, which enhances efficiency in terms of delivery of judgment at the ACA. The link is the same, chapter 14. The objective is to ensure timely finalization of cases in the ACA. This will enhance the delivery of judgment of the ACA by monitoring the implementation of monthly standards and producing those reports to support the court to achieve 80% finalization rate, the same as the Constitutional Court. The indicator lays the percentage of cases finalized, baseline moving from 70%, which will take to 80% throughout the year. The High Court, in household decisions in terms of legal judgment at the High Court, the strategic statement seeks to enhance the level of judgment in High Court by monitoring firstly implementation of the norms and standards, producing reports to support the cost to reduce criminal case backlogs from 281 in 2015 to 1920 in the first finalized case, criminal case from 60 in 1415 to 70 in 1920, and several cases from 52% in 1415 to 60% in 1920. This is linked to also to the MTFF as well as the Minister of Delivery Agreement in relation to criminal cases. The objective for this is to reduce the case backlog, increase finalization rate of both criminal cases and civil cases in the High Court, and indicators the number of cases on the backlog roll. 281 is the baseline goal for justice. 1415, we intend to ensure that things are decreased to 206 and throughout the years 1,566,056. Quite serious. Number of percentage of criminal cases finalized with verdict, baseline was 60%. We envisage an increase of 2% throughout the period of the year of the plan. Percentage of civil cases finalized as well as reverse judgments finalized, we have a baseline. And we set the baseline for civil cases at 53% with 2% increment over the years. The reverse judgment, 70% throughout. And this comes from two instruments, the norms and standards, as well as the judicial code of conduct 265. Sub-program 6, specialized courts. Enhancing efficiency and time of delivery of judgment in specialized courts. The objective is to enhance the delivery of judgment of specialized courts by monitoring implementation of norms and standards, producing those reports on finalized cases from 50% in 1415 to 60% in the outer year. The objective is also to ensure timely analysis of cases at this court. The first indicator talks to labor cases. As I've indicated, there are four types of specialized courts in the superior court. The labor cases, 50% was the baseline, and 1516 is an increment of 2% that will sustain over the years. Land claims court, 50%, the same principle of 52% in the financial year, taking 2% over the years. We did not have baselines on electoral cases and competition appeal courts, so we set a baseline, sorry, a target of 90% for electoral and 72% for competition appeal courts, which will be sustained over the years and an increment of 2% in the competition appeal courts. Legal education and research, which purpose is to provide education programs to all judicial officers, including policy development research for administration justice. This program consists of sub-program 1, SAGEI, providing continuing judicial education for judicial officers and training aspirant judicial officers, and secondly, judicial policy and research to ensure that we provide advisory opinion and policy development and research. Sub-program 1 is the South African Judicial Education Institute support, capacitating and serving in aspirant judicial officers to perform optimally, and the judicial statements talk to enhancing performance of judicial officers by increasing courses from 1450 to 85 in 1920 financial years. And this was a different ensure provision of support to the institute to execute its mandate of continuous education, and it is linked to chapter 13 of the NDP, indicating the number of judicial education courses conducted in 1450 that will increase to 65 in this current financial year, and by 5 in each financial year of this chapter. And the note here is saying that the date of appointment for 157 district court magistrates is 1st February 2016, so SAGEI will not have sufficient funds to train all the newly appointed magistrates. We just want to make that note for the members to see so that we can be assisted in that regard. Mm-hmm.
Judicial Policy and Research. Strategic objective to enhance the governance of the judiciary in the OCJ by providing support to the judiciary in increasing number of opinions on policy development and regulatory services from 10 in 1415 to 15 in the outer year 1920. This is linked to Chapter 40 on the NDP. Indicators, two indicators, one address the opinions on policy development and regulatory services provided. This line is 10 in 1415, will sustain that throughout the financial years, increasing with one. Percentage of disclosures for judges' registrable interest, it is 80% in 1415, because it is prescribed, we determine 100% compliance with that, because the OCJ is the registrar of judicial of judges' registrable interest. Key risks associated with the strategic plan. Firstly, in Program 1, which talks to leadership and management, the strategic risk identified is the inadequate support or capacity to optimally operationalize the OCJ under the Superior Court Act Dispensation, Secret Superior Court Act. And the litigation or intervention is that we intend to recruit with limited resources we have, recruit skilled personnel, and retain the technical expertise to enable the department to operate. We intend also to continue to pursue National Treasury to relook at unfunded mandates of the OCJ and seek the Honorable Members Committee, committee members' support in ensuring that we get at least something given to us with regards to implementing the Superior Court Act. We also intend to mitigate this risk by exploring donor funding, which we've already started engaging through the Department of Justice. Under Program 2, risk, we identify these transitional challenges regarding the transfer function from justice and inadequate systems to measure court performance. On these transfer challenges, we mitigate this by ongoing stakeholder engagement to ensure that the approach, the phased-in approach and adequate control measures are in place, and we have sustained the transitional arrangement with the Department of Justice until the Department is on solid footing. On inadequate systems to measure court performance risk, the mitigating intervention will be enhancing Superior Court Performance System, enhancing the Superior Court Performance System, as we believe that something has already been in place in the Department of Justice, so we need not start from scratch. Program 3, risk, adequate capacity to provide training to judicial officers. The mitigation is to develop e-learning systems so that we reduce the cost incurred in hiring venues to conduct training in, which is much of our budget, as well as partnerships with relevant stakeholders to enhance the judicial education programs. In conclusion, Honorable Members, the OCJ Strategic Plan and Annual Performance Plan is still unfunded to the amount of 75.7 million for the 15-16 financial year. We are humbly asking the Portfolio Committee to assist us to negotiate with the National Treasury to allocate funds for all unfunded mandates or parts thereof. We also, the OCJ Strategic Plan and APT are aligned to the National Treasury framework of strategic planning and performance, annual performance planning. And both the two documents are also aligned to the NTSF, the National Development Plan, and focus on service delivery, as well as being aligned to the Minister's Delivery Agreement. In conclusion, Honorable Members, the objectives will be applicable for the next 5 years and evaluation thereof will only be done at the end of the NTSF. The linkages have been established between the plans and government outcomes and priorities. The OCJ priorities are aligned to Outcome 3, as I've already alluded to. All people in South Africa are and feel safe. And on Program 1, Administration, we are linked to Outcome 12, which applies to all government national departments. On Program 2, we are linked to Chapter 14 of the NDP in Vision 2030, which is strengthening judicial governance and the rule of law. On Program Program 3, we are also linked to Chapter 4, so 14 of the NDP, which is already a little bit above. Thank you very much, members. I will appreciate questions and guidance from your side. Thanks.
Thank you, Nursing. Can you just educate this committee? When we had a meeting with the Chief Justice, I guess that report will still be tabled before us for discussion, but it was pointed out that the finalization of the traditional courts bill would relieve the judiciary of the burden. Now, in your presentation, there's no mention of the traditional courts bill, especially in relation to the South African Judicial Education Institute. Is that institute not supposed to also train the administrators of the traditional courts? If so, if not so, why? Where would those be, those ones be trained? And if no provision is made for them, does that not suggest that traditional justice is not put at the same level, or rather indigenous African law is not accorded the same status as Roman Dutch law and English common law? But also a question maybe which should not put to you, which would be a concern for me, is that the enactment of the Superior Court Bill is part of the transformation of the judiciary that we have been calling for over years. But it would seem we are put in a situation where you have to beg for resources to implement that bill. And you are even thinking of approaching donor funding. Does it mean that those who called for the transformation of the judiciary are not serious about it? Why do you have to go and look for money elsewhere to implement a priority for this government? And then I am going to take Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Swart, Honorable Maila, and Honorable Mpumulwana. Maybe it would be better that you take first questions, and then we take one by one so that you are not clouded. And can I assume that there are no additions by any of your colleagues on your presentation?
Stephen, I think we can proceed with questions, and my team will get as they answer the questions. Thanks. Stephen, I just want to confirm that the training of the traditional officer, like a better word, is indeed part of such a program, but the head of such a faculty is here, that can still take that question so that he can fill it in. But I think the last question here was the lamentation of the Friday with regards to resources, and the fact that we are not given funds to implement the Superior Court Act. That is the process that we are engaged with, which is not necessary. We need to put different context also. When we have been engaging with Treasury before we were doing the budget vote and before the transfer took place, Treasury's argument was that let the transfer such head money to implement the superior corporate because they are never in their best life.
We'll leave that to the committee to deliberate, because my understanding is that transformation of the judiciary is a serious matter. We'll be deceived with this matter for a long time. And now if you have to be going everywhere, cap in hand, it means maybe we're wasting our time to call for such transformation. But the committee will perhaps be in a better position to deal with the matter.
Dr. Moshe will deal with the traditional
Chair and honorable members, we ran a pilot that we call Judicial Skills for Traditional Leaders in the 2013-14 financial year. We started in Limpopo. In the last financial year, we conducted 5 workshops in 6 provinces. Just recently, before the end of the financial year, we did a workshop on the Northern Cape and State. We are challenged by lack of funds. We have then contacted the Department of Traditional Affairs, I think I'm calling it correctly, that we will provide the facilitators, then they have to provide all the other logistical support. We are hoping that that will be taken place soon. We have been contacted in the last week by KZN as well as Mpumalanga, where COPTA has taken the responsibility of arranging for logistics and just provide the transition, the facilitators and the material. Thank you.
What is the content of what you're teaching? Because the universities don't teach, indigenous African law. Now, what are your facilitators teaching? Where do they get the content? Is it possible maybe to get a full report of what is happening so that we can inform ourselves whether, just cut and paste of information?
Chair, we will provide that report, but just for information, before training starts in the province, there is consultation with the leadership of the province of traditional leaders. If you may remember that in the council for the representation of the traditional leaders, who we consult with as well as the leadership of that particular province, they are the ones who tell us where their needs are. And we also have experienced senior magistrates that are coming from traditional leadership who also have assisted in the facilitation of the courses. So if you're really informed by the needs of the particular province, that information will be provided in writing.
On the same issue of training of traditional leadership chairperson, it will be very much important if, as you have already alluded to, maybe we have a content of what is being traditional leaders are being workshopped upon. Because Dr. Michelle will recall that during 2011-2012, subject to correction, there was a program, a proposal of the House program on training of traditional leaders. But unfortunately, that program was not speaking to or talking to day-to-day operations of what is transpiring in traditional courts. Is it focused on what normally we're taught at school, such as so-called African law? So I think it will be better if the said program becomes so inclusive, Dr. Mjee, to an extent that I understand you say that due to financial constraints, you are unable to reach a lot of affected stakeholders. And my other concern, Chairperson, is that the focus is mainly on males, to be honest. Because 90% of those people who are found in the houses are male traditional leaders. And what about ordinary, let's say, queens, who generally are at home, are not members of those houses? So indirectly, as OCJ or as a nation, we are indirectly discriminating against women. On face value, it appears okay, but we are indirectly discriminating. So let us also look into that. And on the issue of donor funding, Chairperson, I also have it here already, although you have already touched on it. I fear that it may somehow compromise the independence or impartiality of the judiciary. So maybe if this issue of donor funding, concept of donor funding, it can be unpacked very clearly. This is the compromising the OCJ or judiciary independence or impartiality. Again, on the issue of specialized courts, the land court is really moving at a very, very slow pace in adjudicating to claims by communities. Hence, nowadays, you see people invading land. And mostly, this takes place, like in rural areas, is taking place in a very, 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 very fast way, to an extent that even the department is unable to, even municipalities are not doing anything. And poor traditional leaders don't know what to do or where to go, you know. And also, some political parties are taking advantage of that. This issue of unlawlessness, of land invasion, you know. We have there is a farm in Limpopo, down from then 1006LS. That's a case in point, what is happening. So the land court really takes more than, imagine from 1998, takes more than 8-10 years to settle cases. What's happening? As part of a specialized court. I've seen a slide you were saying by, is it this financial year, you'll increase that by 52%. That's nothing on grassroots. That grassroots is happening. So how do we explain this to communities? Because it will expedite, it will aggravate, not expedite, it will aggravate the situation. And then issue of office accommodation, I heard you actually saying you are temporarily accommodated elsewhere. So is this a government building or are you paying rent? If so, how much is it? And then 324 unfunded polls. Chairperson, it make mention that the spread plan and under APP is still... Oh!
Would you like to come back?
Okay, thank you.
So, because I actually want us to exhaust this thing with the traditional courts. You see, I think we want to create one country and not go back to the bank systems. If you look at indigenous African law, the communities may speak different languages, but the substance of the law is the same. Why is there no effort to, as the institute, bring representatives of different indigenous systems, try to engage dialogue, find out what are the commonalities, and develop a curriculum that can be generally be applicable, because the differences are really at the level of customs. And we're not talking about customs, and I don't think we expect you to teach customs. We expect you to teach indigenous African law and the principles are common, just a difference of languages. Why don't you start there? Because also, if you say you are doing pilots, you have financial constraints, So how many years is this inequality going to take? So I think that the approach also leaves much to be desired. But also, I think it would be expecting too much to ask you to deal with this matter, because the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs have got to transform the traditional councils, because these traditional councils are run by men, and women are not participating, and then discrimination of those women will continue. So I think that we need a standardized curriculum that is applicable across the country. The institute can play a role, and then we need cooperation between yourselves, the Ministry of Justice and COCTA to transform as speedily as possible the traditional councils. And then there's the Department of Rural Development that rely on the land courts. The land court is actually as good as dysfunctional. And now I learned that some people are challenging the constitutionality of the land of that court. Why are you silent about that? What are you doing about that that challenge? What are the implications if that act is found to be unconstitutional? What would be the status of all the judgments that were made by that court? So these issues will be labor, because they are serious for the stability of the country. Because if the courts can't deliver, especially the land claims court, can't deliver, then you are giving hooligans and anarchy an excuse for invading land and doing all sorts of things. So these matters are very urgent. I think we need to hear from you. What are you doing? And those who are supposed to give you the resources must also be informed that if they don't give you the resources, they are creating a serious problem for the stability of the country. So I think you shouldn't be apologetic. Tell us your challenges, because these are the challenges of the country. They are not your challenges as the office of the Chief Justice. So we want to hear it all and deal with it.
Courts, I would ask you to comment, and I know, and congratulations on your first budget, right, first of all. And we know the previous budget was not drafted by you, but if you look at the budget that was given previously to specialized courts, it was 39.8 million. It's going up to 41.9 million, which is a nominal increase. It's hardly anything. It's 2.1 million, which is a nominal increase of 5.39%. and a real percentage of 0%, 0.5%. So it's a concern against the backdrop of what the two biggest speakers have said about the funds allocated to specialized courts, including the lands court. So I'd like you to comment on that and how the decision is taken on the allocation of increases to courts. Because we see as that, we see the Constitutional Court was given an extra 10 million. Specialized courts only 2 million, and the SCA was only given 500,000. So it seems I'd need some explanation against the backdrop of what the two previous speakers have said. If we want our courts to be effective, we've got to capacitate them. How was that increase decided upon? Thank you.
Thanks. Maybe just to round off the first discussion around the traditional court, I'll ask Dr. Mushu to deal with those aspects. I'll finalize it and deal with the other aspects. Yes.
Chair, I noted your concerns about the curriculum development and the transmission of the traditional council. I will be in contact with CTA as well as DJ and see what it is that you can put together and provide a report.
as well as the issue of the curriculum, will attend to that and provide feedback. And thanks for agreeing to be a member of the G Council. You don't appreciate the difficulty. Thank you.
I haven't told my colleagues because nobody wrote a letter to say I'm appointed to be a member of the judicial training. So yes, now that you say it, I've got to confirm that is so. It was decided. So I hope my colleagues will withdraw me and say I did not consult them. Honorable
Redenbach. Oh, we have not dealt with the other aspects of the questions, if you can hear me. Okay. Dr. Mussoui has indicated that the issues Mema Mutapu relating to gender issues and traditional leadership training will be looked at. However, maybe one of the comments I need to make also is we note also the members' comments on the discrimination aspect around females and the traditional leadership and training aspect relating thereto. I think we will also ensure that through the child sisters, some of the comments we will share with them so that it can also guide on how this should be taken forward. On the specialized course, Nema Mutapu, you raised the issue of the donor funding and the possibility of compromise and the independence of the judiciary. Maybe just to qualify that we are also mindful as the administrators of the facility. But what we are looking at is to look at aspects that relate mostly to issues related to systems and not necessarily issues that will be too close towards the judicial aspect from the judicial functions. So when we approve, we have not yet done so, I must qualify. We have just started the process with the Department of Justice, who are already in that space, to see what aspects can we share with them, with the OCC, regarding the donor funding. One example that one can make is court performance monitoring systems. So those are technical systems that will not necessarily encroach on the judicial function as such because it's just a tool. So we are mindful of that and we will be circumspect when we deal with those things so that that is not done. But donor funding generally is used to government is really able to do that. I hope I've covered that aspect completely. Only moving at the same pace in relation to adjudication of land claims costs. Thus, we have been, as the administration, we work with the heads of course with regards to performance information. So what we will do, I will escalate this and have a discussion with the head of this court just to look at those aspects. But with regards to performance. But when it comes to issues of the implications on lending relations, etc., I think it's a matter that maybe ourselves and the Department of Justice will have to look at because those are issues that impact on policy, which lies within the department. This also talks to the issue raised around the Act, the challenging of the Act with the Child Performance Raised. Those are policy aspects which usually what we deal with in the OCD is to fail and deal with it with the Department of Justice Policy Development Unit to ensure that these aspects are looked at. And I will also ask my colleague from the CNN to deal with this matter related to the Act as such. And the other aspect was related to the office accommodation rentals. Currently we are renting about 3,000 square meters. I think 3,000 square meters of accommodation that we are interim located at. And it's already alluded to before the house. We are not even having appropriate accommodation for all officials. And the rental cost is 2.35 million. And we are looking at increasing that space to 5,000 square meters and starting the 7.5 million that I've already alluded to in my presentation. Mm-hmm. the other aspect relating to the funding of the specialized course, the 39.8 million, the CFO will add to this, but honorable members first, the budget of the superior course were transferred from the previous lines just as they are, and therefore I don't think the only response I can give you that how the decision was taken to increase is really based on the MTF numbers as well as the baseline. So the transfer was just if baseline and justice. So there wasn't necessarily any process of looking at what actually each court requires, because the budget was just in plan based. And especially the CFO staff is also here. But I think members are aware that the superior course has always been underfunded. So that is one aspect that we've been raising with National Treasury to say, remember that we are taking over the function, but there has always been underfunding of all these courts. Okay, so the CFO can ask to speak to that aspect.
Thank you, Honourable Jane. Yeah, the SG is 100% correct when she said that the baselines that were approved in the 2014-15 MTF in the Justice Department have been transferred by National Treasury. So we as the OCJ didn't have any opportunity to make any inputs in terms of additional needs. Treasury has indicated, as the SG indicated earlier, that the first one was to finalize the transfer with current baselines, and as and when the department has been properly established and we move forward, they will then allow us to make submissions for additional funds. And just one aspect that Honourable Scott also raised was the increase of the Constitutional Court by more or less 10 million. One of the reasons for that is you will remember that the SG in the presentation indicated that the unit for judicial support, the unit dealing with the judges' remuneration and salaries and benefits, has been transferred from the OJ to us. Now the allocation of that unit's budget has been slotted into the sub-program under the Constitutional Court. So it looks as if CONCORD has an increase, but it's basically a whole unit from the OJ that has been transferred and allocated under that program. And then obviously a portion of that 10 million is your normal treasury allocated increase of 4-5% that was allowed in the 2015-16 budget.
That things don't look like what they are not, especially for lay people like ourselves. Mr. Chigari?
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to confirm that indeed there is a constitutional challenge on the restitution of Land Rights Act, which is before the Constitutional Court. I don't think there is much that at this stage we, as the OCJ, we can say, because the matter, as they normally say, is before the court. So chances are that, because if I remember well, after looking at some of the papers that are before the Constitutional Court, the challenge relates to the manner in which the legislation was handled by Parliament. So chances are that the legal advisors from Parliament will have to, you know, do something about it. They will be required to actually indicate to the Constitutional Court as to how the legislation was being dealt with when it came before, you know, this Parliament, to be passed by both the National Assembly and the National House of the National Council of Provinces. So I think that's as much as, you know, I can say on the matter, because it's still before the court, so it will have to be dealt with in that way.
Yes, if I may. Yes. Is that the amendment? I presume it's not the original act, it's the amendment that was passed. Yes. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
It's really problematic for a committee like this to be asking questions about that, what is happening. We should be informed. We should know what's happening, whether it's a challenge of the amendment or the regulations. We should be the most informed on the matters to be able to anticipate.
Put you on that. And maybe, this is something that we need to look at, is to what degree matters before the Constitutional Court that have an impact on Parliament are brought to the attention of the Speaker of this committee. And I'll give you an example. We're dealing with the Sexual Offences Act, which was struck down by the Constitutional Court. We as Parliament have to amend that. That's what the Court ordered. But it took the Executive almost 12 months to get to us. With the result, we've now to go back to court to ask for more time. So then we need to set up some mechanism that we as Parliament are advised as soon as possible when there is legislation that is before court. Impact, and obviously the lawyers will be involved as well. But particularly where an act is struck down by the court, where Parliament needs to act on that, so that we also, together with the Executive Chair, then we wouldn't have had to go back. I'm not criticising anyone, I'm just trying to think of some mechanism that would have avoided us with the sexual offences having to go back to court. Had we known a year ago already that that act was struck down. So we need to look at some mechanism that works between Parliament and the OCJ to alert us to these issues. Okay.
Let's not keep on also. I don't think we are saying we want the court to account to us. But I think we are a department. These things are happening. We're saying all we need is information, as the Swati said. We need to be informed about this by you as the department, not the court. If I understand the whole thing well, am I missing up things according to you?
Chair, maybe my understanding is this, that when there is a constitutional challenge, when they lodge papers, the relevant departments, maybe let me put it this way, the land departments that are responsible for the administration of that particular legislation are being served with the papers that are actually put before the court. So that is actually what is, I think, that what has happened here. That obviously, because the legislation, you know, the challenge itself relates to the manner in which Parliament dealt with the legislation. So the Department of Rural Development would be one of those. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, obviously, the papers would be served before them. And the President as well, you know, you have to be served, you know, with those papers. And Parliament as well, you do the same thing. So my sense is that obviously the legal advisors in Parliament should be aware of that particular constitutional challenge that is before the Constitutional Court. But if maybe, as Honorable Swartz is suggesting, that if there is a legislation that, you know, that was actually passed by Parliament that we are aware of, that, you know, maybe we can, you know, have a mechanism with the legal advisors here in Parliament to relay, you know, from time to time about, you know, some of the things. We don't have any issue with that. We can have that relationship.
No, court, because we can't rely on legal advisors. We're an organ of Parliament. So there has to be a way in which these papers are brought to the attention of this committee and, of course, to the Speaker. But I think you've clarified us. We can leave the matter. Thank you very much. Honorable Breenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Mr. Schwartz. It's your first budget, right? And I think you've done a really good job, so well done. I have some concerns, however, about the donor funding. I'm not entirely covered by your reply. I find it a very disconcerting aspect to find in your budget that you would explore donor funding coming from the Office of the Chief Justice. And then one other issue is the percentage of disclosures for judges. Currently, I think Judge Harams is litigating in this regard. Could you tell me how far that litigation has progressed and what the impact of that will be on these figures? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I note the concern around the donor funding, and I undertake to reconsider we have not necessarily done any feedback around that. We were just starting that process, linking with justice department. But if the committee feels very strong about that, we will definitely reconsider and give the guidance about this to augment our capacity constraints, but the guidance is always welcome. On the issue of the disclosures, I will ask the fortunately we have the registrar in the house, the registrar of justices of interest, Mr. Petra is here. I will ask him to deal with the issue around the Haram case, as you will know, it has already been dealt with, and if you take it, that obviously we will continue, and we abide by the court decisions, and therefore we will not intervene in the area, so the judge has already discharged under the circumstances in that of Haram's case.
Why do you assume that all members understand what is involved in the Haram case?
Okay, Chair, when he deals with the person who will just give a bit of that background on what the issue is regarding the disclosure. The difference between when you require a judge to disclose, there are two categories, the serving judges and the judges.
Honorable Swart, he thinks I should be put that.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, Mr. Swart doesn't think that you shouldn't have asked the question. He thinks you should have read the document.
There's a brief reference in the document, but it's always good to get the explanation.
I am a devil's advocate as the chair. Proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The recognitions that were came into place in February 2014 divide judges into two, or categorize judges into two groups. First, there are judges in active service, and there are judges discharged from active service. And then within judges discharged from active service, it further divides them into two further groups. Judges who are discharged after 65 years and serving 15 years on the bench, if they request not to be required to perform service, they can be discharged without a requirement to perform additional service. But a judge who is discharged after 7 years of age, that judge will be required in terms of the act to perform additional service for 3 months per year. And those judges were required to disclose their interest. But judges who retire after 65 years, who have served 15 years, were not required to disclose their interest. Judge Hams challenged that law and the regulation, saying that it is discriminating against discharged judges and that it was rational and was unconstitutional. About 3 weeks ago, the High Court in Pretoria ruled in his favor. They issued an order declaring that section of the regulations unconstitutional. The impact of that, or the consequence of that, is that now all retired judges are not required to disclose their interests. Only ex-judges in active service must disclose their interests. However, if a retired judge is called upon to perform some service, a party to litigation can make a request in chambers to the head of the court that particular judge must disclose his or her interest if he or she is called upon to perform service. But generally, discharged judges are generally not required to disclose their interest. Active judges are required to disclose their interest every much of every year.
Honorable Maya. Or actually, it's a fake because No, you are right because you came before because you're following up on something. I want to allow you to proceed.
It's a follow up on what I just presented now on retired judges. Okay. Can I just make it a follow up for clarity?
No, fine.
Proceed. Because it feels like. What you're actually saying is the judgment actually reverses what is supposed to be part of the retired or the register of interests of judges, because it was supposed to be inclusive of retired judges, with the argument that retired judges can still be called upon. Actually, from what I hear now, it's as if they are no longer going to have to declare. Is that so?
Thank you, Honourable Member. The impact of the decision is that active judges are required every March of every year to disclose the interest. The charge judges in terms of this order now are not required to disclose their interest every year. However, if a retired judge is called upon to serve in court or in a commission, that judge can be required to disclose his or her interest. And if he or she is requested to do that, he must do it through the head of court. In which they are still required to disclose, but only when they are called to perform service after retirement. Whereas with active judges, they must disclose every year, every March. That is the situation.
Not exactly, Chairperson. I think one thing during the discussion, Honourable Schwartz, the judges have actually expressed concern around having retired judges disclosing. And a lot of debate took place. And the matter was so fully substantiated why. It's actually worrying now, sitting here today, that there has been a case that was into court that reversed the whole arrangement. Is something moving forward that we should look into?
I'm not called to point to pronounce on that matter, but my gut feeling is that if a judge is retired and is called to perform some duties, there may be instances of conflict of interest. So the disclosure is meant to deal with that. So I think for me it would make sense that that position be maintained. But anyway, we can debate. But I see so many hands shaking on this side. I guess it's in agreement. Honorable Pula.
My comment is just that the judge who gave judgment has got a vested interest, is likely to be wrong. He's going to retire.
You know, Honorable Breitenbach, very disciplined. She doesn't just walk away from the meeting. Can you speak before you go?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there are a number of issues, and again, from our side, just to assist and congratulate the ICJ for doing work under very difficult budgetary conditions. Now, Chair, I need to choose my words very carefully, but when we met with the Chief Justice in Johannesburg, there seemed to be an indication of difference of opinion between him and the Minister. Do you remember that, or am I misconstruing that at all? Because if that was the case, that there was some difference of opinion on an interpretation of the Supreme Court Act, and there isn't sufficient funds being given from the executive side, then it could be a problem. I would like to look at the report of our discussions there as to whether there was, I'm not saying tension or anything, I'm just saying there seemed to be a bit of a difference of opinion as to the interpretation of some provisions of the Act. And I'm not asking to comment on that, I'm just saying that we as Parliament need to bear that in mind, that naturally there will be some elements where there's a debate between the Executive and OCJ as they're finding each other. But when it comes to then budget allocations, the OCJ office might not be able to do their work properly because they're not given enough funds from the executive. So that is something we need to be aware of when we look at that. Chair? Yes?
Something. I think that the Chief Justice gave a factual report of the situation. To be fair, we'll just have to table the report and discuss it. So it would be premature even to suggest that there are differences of opinion, because there was a factual report on the side of the Chief Justice, and we must just engage with that report.
I appreciate that, sir, and I'm sure the Minister would respond if there was a difference of opinion. I'm not even saying let's leave it at that, let's correct that. So I look forward to that further engagement. But it does take us back to the principal issue. But when we pass legislation, the Supreme Court's bill, there's a requirement that it must be properly costed. And clearly in this case it wasn't done. So we need to be careful when we pass legislation, because there isn't sufficient funds available to implement the legislation that we passed. And I think we need to look at that to be careful in the future. There's a provision of financial implications. A bill must be properly costed. So we do understand that there will be an incremental approach, because one of the aspects that is a concern to me is the whole issue of where the heart of the judicial system is, and that's at the magisterial court level. And one of the provisions in the Superior Courts Act is reports on the magistrates and the magistrates' courts that must go to the JP, and there's no reference to that yet. Now, I do appreciate that there's an incremental approach and there are budgetary constraints, so you've got all my sympathy, but maybe you could just comment on when we will see the Superior Courts. There's an assignment to each judge president, a role relating to the coordination of the magistrates' courts falling within the jurisdiction of that JP, and they then need to submit their data to the head of the court and then to the Chief Justice, and that's an administrative support function in terms of the Superior Court Act. Again, the easy answer to that is give us more money and we'll be able to do that. So, but it just illustrates the fact that this will be an incremental implementation, and we, Parliament, need to assist as much as possible with that regard. Now, another second issue of concern is the staff complement of 1766, of which 324, you've got 1442 now employed, but 324 is vacant and unfunded. Now, that I presume is your model of what is an, would be an ideal situation. And you've got 324 staff that aren't there. So can we as Parliament expect OCJ to do their work when they don't, when they've got 324 staff that aren't there? So Chair, these are all issues that we're going to have to look at as we're going along and assist the OCJ as they find their way. They're doing a remarkable job at the moment. But clearly there's going to be a teething process. Can I just ask, thirdly, the way that you report on the targets, and we raised it with Correctional Services last week, remember about the percentages, is it not helpful in one or two circumstances where you actually give numbers, you say backlog numbers, and would it not be useful also to, where possible, give figures, as opposed to percentages, where you say we're aiming to reduce the number of backlogs, and you do that in one or two cases, as opposed to percentages, which has been the traditional way of doing it. But that concretizes it to us, so we can then see these are the numbers. Because remember now, when you give your national, your annual report, you're going to say these are the number of cases finalized by the Constitutional Court, 500, by the High Court, 600. So your target then could be actual 50% of that figure, and that maybe helps us concretize the improvement as opposed to targets, and that's how it's been done in the past. So that is something to consider, Chair, but a massive concern is the shortfall of 75 million, and that is why I asked the question how the funds are being allocated, specialized courts and that. We might need in our report to make reference to that severe shortfall of 75 million in our resolution, just to say how can we approach, and bear in mind what I said, I'm going to ask the Minister last week, is he engaging with the Minister of Finance on the budgetary constraints faced by the Department, which would include the OCJ. So we can both do it from our perspective as Parliament, as well as again engaging with the Minister on his engagement with the Minister of Finance. Bear in mind that everyone wants a bigger piece of the pie, and the Minister of Finance is also under constraints. I sit on the Finance Committee as well. But Chair, thank you for those few comments.
So I think we just need to bear in mind that we're dealing with an independent arm of the state. And the question is, who is this person who has the right to decide that the implementation of this transformation must be incremental? What does that mean? And what are the implications of that incremental approach to the image of the judiciary, to the legitimacy of the whole court system? And when we go out to oversee what's happening there, what right would we have to say we are not performing when we know that these people have not been given resources to do their work? So I think that this commission has got to deal with this matter, and if need be, sit with justice and also with treasure to deal with this matter, because otherwise there's no point in overseeing the courts, because we are not prepared to give them resources to do their work. Honorable Michael.
Thank you. Actually, Chair, my question was on donor funding, and I think it has been adequately dealt with. But maybe let me just commend OCJ on their first budget, and also commend them for not being tempted to use consultants. That's very commendable. Thanks very much.
You see, it's very good to be the last person, because everybody was said that one is
with the exception that I wanted just a comment. How far is the judiciary that is justice, the actual judge, is transformation? Are they transformed? I'm saying this because I'm not at all saying that they are not, and nor am I saying that I'm challenging their I don't have the right to do so. But I'm trying to find out, because in the earlier days there was the judges, they were deliberately used by the government to promote a particular policy. How far have you stayed in terms of? Secondly, as far as equity is concerned, how far have you transformed? Some people are saying that the Supreme Court of Appeal actually has appointed more whites from 1994 and before. Can I get an idea? Thank you.
Is it fair to ask to say how far are the judges transformed?
I wish to withdraw.
No. We as Parliament, we are represented in the Judicial Service Commission. So the judges that are there, we ourselves agreed that they are the right men and women who can do the job, and in fact the judiciary has not disappointed us. It's doing very well, and I guess if we give them resources they can do even much better. You will remember that there is a project at the Investor Forte which is looking at the judgments and things like that. We are awaiting that report, but I think the only thing that is disappointing, which has been pointed out, is the situation in the Land Claims Court, and that also you can't blame to the judiciary, because it is government that must appoint full-time judges there, and that has not been done to the best of my knowledge. So if things go wrong there as well, we can't blame the judiciary. But thank you for withdrawing that question. I think
the last question that I wanted to ask, which I think that is not controversial at all, is, ma'am, you are saying that you have increased your space and
and it's all about the same premises. Because the those businesses are not necessarily the best premises, you know. Or are you talking about something else, another place?
I'll say before you answer that I think this committee must deal with the report flowing from our meeting with the Chief Justice and ourselves say, what are we doing about the concerns that they are raised? Because actually we should be giving them a report about what the concerns they raised as to what have we done about it. But anyway, because we haven't had time to process that report. It was circulated amongst ourselves. It's just that it became available when Parliament was going on recess. But it was circulated. We will circulate it again because we want to place it before you when the department comes during this week. Honourable Jackie.
Thank you, Jefferson. Not taking into consideration that more funds are required in terms of leave of those for the Chief Justice. And this one goes to the CFOs, for both Office of the Chief Justice and the Justice Department. How are you going to create the balancing act? Because for now, the language that's spoken by Treasury is austerity measures. And of course, there's a wish list, but how are you going to actually deal with this wish list? Really also taking into consideration that we are applying to the county austerity measures. Thank you, Jessica.
That's fair, Honourable Lama Jackie.
At this point, you know, it's just to sensitize them to find out if this is what they are considering. So that we don't have a process that continues with our support, not taking into consideration other issues that are of concern that have got to do with the fiscal of the country. So I just want to understand from their side as to whether cognizance actually taking with regard to this that I have just presented now. Please allow them to respond to this.
You know I can't stop them from responding, but I think that what we are dealing with here is not a question of austerity method. We are dealing with a new department that must be set up. There are certain minimum things that must be put in place. But anyway, maybe what we should advise you to do, you should really prepare a plan which indicates what is it that you require to have a functioning department, because if that department does not function, the whole judiciary is going to be in a mess, so that we must deal with the austerity measures where they apply. But I think at the moment it can be. Can you answer the question?
Okay, maybe let's start with the last question and go back to the other questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague will add where I struggle. What have we done in terms of the agreements at the National Steering Committee between the OCJ and the Department of Justice? There are certain areas where we do know that we are lacking resources. And in terms of those agreements, we've identified shared services. We, amongst the personnel at the regional offices, for instance, in DOJ, will still assist us with the breathing period to perform the crucial functions that we cannot neglect in the OCJ. And as and when the capacity then increases in the OCJ, they can then release our hands and allow us to continue on our own. It's not only at the regional level, which is actually provincial level, but also at the national office. A number of issues have been identified where we will still receive support from the Department of Justice in this regard. So between the two of us, we have identified with the steering committee those areas, and we have also agreed that as and when we move forward during this financial year, and we see that there are areas where there is really serious underfunding in terms of executing the current mandate, and the current functions that we need to perform, we will then also jointly approach National Treasury in the adjustment budget process between the two departments to assist us with whatever we've identified.
Melinda said that you don't have consultants. Maybe we should use this session also to advise you as to what you need to do. Honorable Bonga?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think what we need to understand is we take cognizance of the circumstances in the current economic climate. And within those lines that has been established, we need to balance, as you have rightfully said. And in the Department of Justice, what we did was to reprioritize. You would have seen that we have spoken about that at length last year during the adjustment budget, indicating how we have reprioritized towards new, or not new, but priority areas. Also, an indication of what we've done is to start to think about things differently and see how we can deal within our systems and our processes more efficiently with matters. In other words, we're starting to do things differently. We also, in the process of, you would understand, with the IJS systems and all of those integrated systems that we are starting to finalize and implement, we would also find that things will be more seamless and needing less human intervention in some areas. And all of those things will give us more efficiency and effectiveness in the end without costing us then more than what we have already invested in. I just want to stress that you would have noticed the increase in the OCJ budget of 13%. If you look at the baseline budget for the Department of Justice, our budget was just 4.99%. So you can understand that we gave them, through to them, even more than what they had. And I also wanted to indicate that all the cost containment measures, we have absorbed all those budget cuts that has been implemented. So I think there is some maneuverability also for them, and they will also just need to consider how to do things differently. It might be different from what they intended when they designed the systems, but it is possible. So I think if we keep the big goal in mind, we can make sacrifices, but without actually impacting too much. But we are very much aware that in some instances we would need more funding, especially with the state of the courts. You know, infrastructure-wise, and there the minister is in communication with the Minister of Finance and also with the minister relating to public works. Thank you.
Any other questions? I think we should conclude the matter by saying that are there questions?
Thanks, Chair. Honourable staff, comment on the vacancies at 324. We grew to 1766 because of the transfer from since October. And if you add the fact that I indicated 6.8 million, we underfunded as OCG before the transfer. So these 324 vacancies are still remain unfunded. And as the CFOs have indicated, there is good cooperation. The assist way is really pressing for the OCJ to perform. But I don't think it would be fair to expect justice to fund 324 to assist us to that extent. As already indicated, Superior Court Act was never funded even through justice. But overall, on the issue of funding, the minister, when he visited the Superior Court in February, he has indicated that he will be meeting with the Minister of Finance on issues related to funding around the course and the OCJ. So that has already been committed by the Minister. The other aspect, honourable members, was getting the target and the perceived usage of percentages. In some instances, we use percentages where we could not anticipate the load that will be coming. But as we are growing, we will consider this very much because I think it's quite useful, these numbers, because it becomes very tangible. So we will consider that in areas where we can ensure your input and guidance is very valuable.
Ottawa staff said the issue with the coordination. When will this coordination of the functions of the ministry take place? And you already answered the question that we don't have the funds. But just to make a comment that on two issues. One, the Security Accords Act requires the regulations be in place in terms of Section 49(1)(f) so that the determination of how the coordination will take place in relation to Section 8 on the Ministry of Justice, that still has to happen. And two, there's already parliamentary work happening. The JPs are already coordinating at the provincial level, what we call the PEC, Provincial Efficiency Enhancement Committee, where he coordinates both the division as well as the regional and district and all the relevant stakeholders at the provincial level to take care of case flow management going forward. So that is the effect that already has begun. We are also seeing in the OCJ with the little that we have how we can assist the GPs to begin to interact with the ministry to start that way. In other courts, it's already happening. It still has to be standardized so that it is not different in different divisions. But it is a struggle because the funds are not available to assist the GPs in that respect. Finally, Chairperson, we welcome the request for us to draft a proper plan on what is required for the OCJ to be fully functional. And we will look at that and develop that and have a discussion with the committee and submit it to them. Thanks.
So I think that this committee has a responsibility.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. We are grateful for your guidance. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do that. Thank you.
We were going to ask about an MPA thing.
Yeah, but I didn't say that. Hey, Bill. How are you, man?
No,
Not in the room,
we're not sitting next to we're not sitting this Thursday, yeah, we're not sitting
I don't know.